This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. The United Kingdom has a new prime minister. Boris Johnson, the former mayor of London and current pro-Brexit firebrand, replaced Theresa May at the head of the ruling Conservative Party last week. In his first speech before the House of Commons, Johnson promised Britain, quote, a future clean, green, prosperous, united, confident, and ambitious.
Our mission is to deliver Brexit on the 31st of October. For the purpose of uniting and re-energising our great United Kingdom and making this country the greatest place on earth. And when I say the greatest place on earth, I'm conscious that some may accuse me of hyperbole. But it is useful to imagine the trajectory on which we could now be embarked.
Things are contentious in the UK, maybe more so than usual. At one point, the House Speaker had to interrupt the Prime Minister's speech to lecture his fellow MPs.
Our constitutional...
Order, I apologise for interrupting the Prime Minister. There's far too much noise in this chamber. And order, and far too many members who think it's all right for them to shout out their opinion at the Prime Minister. Well, let's be clear, it isn't. The statement will be heard and there will be ample opportunity in conformity with convention and as established by me over the last decade for colleagues to question the Prime Minister. But the statement will be heard and it will be heard with courtesy. The Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, may I say I applaud your intervention and I think there's also far too much negativity by the potential.
Well, the Speaker in the House of Commons can bring order to the MPs, I suppose, in the immediate sense, but he does not have the power to bring order to politics in the United Kingdom. Does Boris Johnson? Some people say unlikely. Here with a window into what the Johnsonian era could look like is Anne McElvoy. She's editor for Economist Radio and senior editor at The Economist. Anne McElvoy on the line from London. Thanks for being here.
Great pleasure to be with you.
Well, Boris Johnson, born in our own New York City, educated at Eton, the very poshest school in all of the UK. Fair to say his new job is the one he's wanted for his whole career, his whole life, in fact?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a contemporary of Boris Johnson's, actually, at Oxford. A good thing with Boris Johnson, or not, depending which way you're looking at it, is his march through the elite institutions doesn't leave many out. And we were at Oxford at the same time, and I remember him speaking in the Oxford Union. That's a very well-known debating chamber, modelled on the House of Commons. A lot of 18-year-olds in penguin suits preparing themselves for future glory. And I turned up, and very naive, the 18-year-old, the first person I saw speaking with the same orotund tones that you've just played out there was Boris Johnson. I think it was pretty clear from the get-go that he wanted to be a very senior politician. And I think he had that ambition and that drive from early on to say, I want to be prime minister. I mean, he's not someone who would hide that. And he's finally got there in turbulent circumstances.
They say that Boris is the master of the media moment, much like our own President Donald Trump, that even the branding, even down to the tousled, messy hair, it's not an accident at all. It reflects somebody who's just rolled out of bed, but in fact, he tussles it himself before the television hit begins, that it's all part of a carefully crafted persona.
Yes, it is a carefully crafted persona. I'm a bit careful when it comes to direct comparisons with Donald Trump. I think they're very different kinds of people. I think they're very different kinds of conservative, if indeed Donald Trump is a conservative. I think there is something profoundly conservative about Boris Johnson, but also he is in many ways much more outward-looking, much more small liberal. It's just his liberalism doesn't fall in the places that would be comfortable from left liberals, either in America or the UK. It's funny you should mention the hair, because a great tribe of Johnson siblings, all of whom have rather beautiful and very well-kempt hair, except for Boris, whose hair always looks like a haystack. So there is an element of that. He certainly has consciously modelled himself on Winston Churchill, with that delivery is very Churchillian, and the more so than most other posh boys who went to Eton. So I think there's something that he's always been aiming for there, which was Winston 3.0.
We are warned time and time again not to make too many comparisons between Boris Johnson and Donald Trump, but the master of the media moment perhaps is an apt comparison. Here's the big question. when it comes to Boris Johnson. Maybe the only question that matters when it comes to Boris Johnson. Can he get a Brexit deal done in under 94 days? Now, more and more people think in the UK that they're going to leave the EU on October 1st with no deal on customs or trade or all the many other details of an economic relationship with Europe. Frans Timmermans is first vice president of the European Commission, and he believes that that result would be a tragedy.
For all sides, not just for the United Kingdom. I'm not one of those who's saying, oh, God, they're going to suffer. We're all going to suffer if that happens. And I think if I look back at the last years, I don't think there were many people in the United Kingdom when they voted for Brexit, intentionally voted for a no-deal Brexit. I don't think that happened. I think there is a strong willingness in British society to come out of this in a reasonable way. And I think the best way to come out of this is on the basis of the agreement that was reached with the European Union.
And Boris Johnson likes to talk about positivity. We heard it at the top. He's attacked the gloomsters and the doomsters. But from over here, I have to say, we've watched a Brexit vote and then, you know, a lot of flailing after that. Theresa May stymied time after time to get a majority for any plans to leave the EU. And the EU saying, we're not going to deal anymore. So is there any reason for this optimism that Boris Johnson demands of his fellow MPs and the British public?
Well, there are reasons why he might get along by doing something a bit differently. He's not going to do what Theresa May did, and she tried very hard to do it via a consensus, only to find that she couldn't reach a consensus in her parliament, and she had three goes at that withdrawal agreement, as you rightly point out, which were called meaningful votes, but increasingly were known around Westminster as meaningless votes. So I think Boris Johnson comes in rather differently. He says if nothing else can be cobbled together that we can all agree to, we will leave on October the 31st. That's very different from Theresa May's style and tone. She was never very keen at all about embracing that no-deal message. Frans Timmermans, like a lot of people in the European Commission and on the European side of the table, are saying, well, people didn't vote for no deal. And I think that is true. And I think a no deal is very troublesome indeed. The only thing is, of course, if Boris's polling figures are looking good and confident, he can say, well, this is actually the way that I'm getting the backing to negotiate. And he's trying, you can hear it in his voice, to draw that distinction when he talks about the gloomsters and doomsters. He really means all the people who failed before him. There might be some form of movement on the other side of the channel. I've just been making programmes in France and Germany. And I think if you go to Berlin, where a no-deal Brexit would have really very bad consequences as well, not only for our economy, primarily in the UK, but for the big economies of Northern Europe, you probably get a bit more give than you get if you go to France. And I think what we'll get in the end game is these big governments will have to decide, is there something that they want to offer, or do we all just have to prepare for the immense kind of bureaucracy and entanglement of a no-deal trading arrangement where we have to really go back to world trade rules and build it from the ground up. That would not be easy.
We'll continue the conversation with The Economist and McElvoy in just a minute.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from the United States Postal Service. Every day, innovative companies are reinventing the way business happens. But none of that is possible without the right people. People who get packages to over 150 million delivery points affordably and on time with the latest technology and expertise. Who can help you deliver the future of commerce? The United States Postal Service. See why they deliver more e-commerce packages to homes than anyone in the country at usps.com/future.
It has already been an eventful summer in politics.
Yeah, between the 2020 debates and the president's battle over immigration, there's a lot going on.
And when there's news you need to know about, the NPR Politics podcast is there to tell you what happened.
Not to mention, we're hitting the road so you can meet all of the 2020 contenders.
Oh, NPR is going to drive me completely crazy.
The NPR Politics podcast.
Subscribe!
We're talking about Brexit and Britain's new prime minister with Anne McElvoy of The Economist. Now, Anne, I know that you warned us off of taking too close a comparison between Boris Johnson and our own President Trump, and I'm mindful of it. I am. But you just described something else that's quite Trumpian, which is negotiating from the brink, we have a repeated situation here where crises are created, and then negotiating from a threat of crisis is taken by the leader as being a point of strength in a negotiation. Let me play you a clip of our own President Trump here, who seems pretty excited about Boris Johnson. The president certainly has been a supporter of Brexit. Listen.
Boris is going to be a great prime minister. I predict he will be a great prime minister. He has what it takes. They needed him for a long time. UK needed him for a long time. So Boris and I just spoke. I congratulated him, and he's all set to go.
Now, President Trump's former advisor, Steve Bannon, was a huge proponent of breaking up these alliances, the European Union, maybe even NATO. President Trump has followed along. Does a ringing endorsement from the president of the United States help Boris Johnson domestically, hurt him, or is it an eye roll? What do people think?
Yes, it depends. You know, depends on where you go, doesn't it? But I think you're absolutely right to point out that there are bits that I think can be over-egged in the comparison. I think what is right is that both of them are, in a sense of the word, chances. They are prepared to take risks that other people are not prepared to take. And I think that is why there is this affinity between them, even though and there are lots of things that they don't really agree on at all. I mean, I think Boris is actually a very strong pro-NATO person. He's quite on foreign affairs, tends to be rather nuanced. I mean, he has that, you know, something of that small C conservative thinking on. So he's not a hugely enthusiastic intervener in everything. But I think he's not, neither is he a Donald Trump. He's not a pullback from the world only on your own terms kind of leader. Where I think you're absolutely right is that Donald Trump is sort of embracing Boris Johnson, partly because he likes another random individual who's not allied to the EU elites. And also, I would guess he likes making a bit of trouble with Angela Merkel, who seems to be the kind of enemy of Donald Trump. And so I think there's a bit of mischief being played there. It's also Boris Johnson has, to an extent, I don't want to sort of soften the edges of Boris Johnson's campaign too much. Certainly people in Vote Leave, in the campaign to leave the European Union, almost ahead of the Trump phenomenon, they really did take a sort of a leaf out of that playbook. You know, paint it in bold colours. If people say that's not true, don't worry about it too much. Move on, move the message on. And when people raise their slightly whinging doubts, you know, put them in the corner and say that they're dreadful kind of whinging lefties, and what do you expect? So there is there is that ability, which is sometimes, I think, very interesting in dynamic politics, and then can shade into, shall we say, being loose with the facts or with the verite.
Create the doubt, receive the doubt, then troll the doubt. Sounds familiar as well. Cliff writes this to us on Facebook. You can't run away from your problems, and Britain's problems are economic. Conservative Thatcheromics. Thatcher economics, pardon me, is the Brits' version of Reaganomics, cutting granny's pension to pay for tax cuts for the rich. Class warfare on your own people, it never works, and running away fixes nothing. Stephen writes on Facebook, Boris Johnson is going to crash out of Europe on Halloween, causing the next great worldwide economic depression. And one of the risks of negotiating on the brink, or at least appearing to, is that you could go over it. And that might not have just messaging consequences, but real world economic consequences.
Yes, if we do indeed go over the brink into a no deal arrangement on the 31st, or lack of arrangement on the 31st of October, the conversation would, I think, change very quickly to how does a Boris Johnson government manage this. I think in those circumstances, he'd head for a general election quite quickly, put himself up against Jeremy Corbyn, a very left-wing Labour leader. Then I suppose your gentleman there on Facebook, we could test his thesis about what would happen in those circumstances. But he would be left with a remarkably complicated task of dealing with this so-called no-deal scenario. It's easy to say, oh, you're going to go back to just to basic WTO tariffs. But when you've had that degree of involvement, those connections and everything from food supply chain to last minute delivery to car industry to anything where there could be friction in terms of ports. And remember, we are in Ireland, so it does, everything takes that little bit longer. That, I think, would be such a huge and difficult technological, mechanical task that he would probably need to go and get a new mandate to deal with that. And I think that's the reason why there is a hope that something might come up. But you are right, once you negotiate from the brink, and Boris Johnson is the leader because nobody, or at least not enough people in his party, wanted to continue with a search for consensus they couldn't find. That is the risk you take, and it is a very considerable risk.
Well, we asked for your calls and your questions about Boris Johnson, Mr. Prime Minister, as he's now known. Here's one of your many messages to us.
Warren, I'm calling from Delray Beach, Florida. I used to live in England. My mother was English. Britain must be very careful about Boris Johnson, lest he lead the British people into the hands of the American insurance companies and they lose their wonderful socialized medicine, a national health care system such as we should have here in America.
And Warren says the NHS, the beloved and maligned NHS, is at risk. Don't fall into the same trap as the Americans, he says. It is part of the debate constantly in the UK. Are people worried that their old standbys of the social safety net in the UK could be threatened here?
I mean, there are those who sort of live in a state of fear about the future of the NHS. The real problem that the NHS has is when it needs to get more money now quickly to the front line, and that's been held back a bit in all this chaos and a bit because of the electoral cycle. And the other thing is, and there I would probably challenge the caller a bit, is that the NHS also needs reforms. It is not all over a wonderful service. It is a service that's very good at delivering health care for everyone, which is clearly something that the American system has struggled with and is still struggling with.
And are you calling Warren?
It does have peaks and troughs.
Are you calling Warren?
I think that is.
You're calling Warren a doomster and a gloomster, it sounds like. That's what Boris Johnson would
not use that language. Warren sounds like a very sensible person to me. But I do feel it's almost sort of used with more passion in the US in the argument about looking into Britain than the other way around. It's interesting that Boris Johnson has kept the health secretary in place, who's a Remainer, who is seen as a reformer. And I think really reforming the NHS is probably the task. I don't think it's in any danger. It's so strongly rooted in terms of, it's a bit like, you know, saying that you're going to tear down the BBC in Britain. That sometimes makes us perhaps a bit late onto parts of reform that need to happen within it. I don't see a big danger to the NHS. The worst thing I can see happening in a Boris Johnson government is there's not attention paid to, perhaps it's clear that, you know, I'm on the more reformer side of the agenda on the NHS or on education, that these are areas that need attention and that your country has to pay attention to, whether you're on the left or the right. You want the argument about them to be about how they get better. That needs focus from government. And the thing about Brexit is it's just a huge time suck. I mean, Well, all this is happening. Even if anyone wanted to sell it off to an American insurance company, I'm sure they'd find everyone else was in a meeting dealing with Brexit.
After a quick break, we're going to talk more about Boris Johnson. This is 1A. Stay close.
Support also comes from Rothy's. Rothy's are the everyday flats for life on the go. Stylish, versatile, fully machine washable, and they go with everything from yoga pants to dresses and skirts. Best of all, there's zero break-in period thanks to their woven design, seamlessly crafted from recycled water bottles. Plus, Rothy's always come with free shipping and free returns and exchanges. Find out why BuzzFeed called them their forever shoes at rothys.com/1A.
Going on a big group trip always sounds good in theory, but it can get tricky when you get there and have totally different expectations. Check out NPR Life Kit's new guide on navigating group travel, or subscribe to Life Kit, all guides, for all our episodes, all in one place.
And how exactly are Brits feeling about Brexit just now? They voted for it. It's been chaotic for sure, to say the least, but I saw one comic earlier today, an editorial cartoon making fun of Brexit in the spirit of a Disney cartoon. Piles of gold showering on London, sort of Mary Poppins and Peter Pan style unicorns in bowler hats, you know, flying around Parliament. The idea being it was a fun story, the promise of Brexit, but it's not real. Not going to happen.
You know, the interesting thing is that very broadly speaking, if you go to people who voted for Brexit, they well, still they're very excited and they want to give Boris Johnson this chance to deliver it. And if you were against Brexit, well, you've probably doubled down on your antipathy and you will see the chaos and the failure to deliver a cleaner Brexit in these 3 years as a sign that it's a unicorn in a bowler hat. So it seems to oscillate between hope and despair. And then there's probably quite a lot of people in the middle we don't hear so much about in the broadcast media in the UK who just really kind of they want it done. If you just walk out to a market square somewhere in a small county town in Britain, or indeed you can go 50 miles outside of London, which is very Remain and tends to sort of get, you know, very much into the argument. I go out to every weekend 50 miles out of town and basically the feeling is it hasn't it happened yet. You know, where are you all? Where is this thing that we were promised? So I think there's a very nuanced spread of opinion. There is a sense of I think, irritation in the country at politicians and irritated with politicians, whether of the left or right, or whether Brexit or Remain. And that is a bit dangerous because as you've experienced it in the US with the rise of Donald Trump, when you get a lot of people feeling that the political class, fairly or otherwise, that it's left them behind, it isn't listening to them, it didn't deliver what it promised to deliver, or indeed the other way, that they shouldn't have had the referendum to start with, you get a dislocation. And I noticed that as a reporter at Westminster, people are harsher, you know, the things they shout are harsher, and that sort of warp and weft of British political life has become more reactive. And I think that's something, you know, it would be very good in whatever the outcome if we could step, you know, could we just kind of go back to our generally slightly more distanced and an ability to roll with things. I think that would really help.
Well, before we go, though, Anne, we've been warned. Ed Luce of the Financial Times warned us just last week on this show that Boris Johnson does not have a free hand. He may be on the Brexit mandate do or die right now, but he has Nigel Farage and the populist pro-Brexit party off to the side really threatening him that if he fails here or he calls an election with the wrong timing, he does have Nigel Farage to contend with, not just the Labour Party.
The interesting relationship will be between Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage and the Brexit Party. The initial polling shows that Boris Johnson gets in, Brexit Party falls because those voters who really want it done now think Boris can deliver it. But if that turns out not to be the case, the Brexit Party is very good at popping up and down again. And this is something that is changing in the party landscape. It's a movement. It can rise and fall. It can go away. Nigel Farage can take holiday and come back again. That makes them quite formidable. And the question, I think, for Boris Johnson is how much does he bring in outright populists like Farage into this tent? And at that point, this big tent within his own party gets, you know, gets a little bit more concerned. And it was said of Louis XIV by, of course, a former mistress, who else, that he was a very powerful king, but he had a very small scepter. And I think there is an element of truth. I think you just got the illusion there. There is an element of that about Boris Johnson, that there is a barnstorming, very performative, understands power, how to wield it in the modern media. But in the end, it is precarious power. And I think that is what we're all going to see play out.
Last word goes to Alyssa, who tweets, the most concerning part of a no-deal Brexit is that the Prime Minister is glossing over what a hard border would look like with Ireland. Anyone who knows about the Troubles know how bad checkpoints are there. That might be a piece of British and Irish history that people are loath to go back to. It might not be a possibility in the immediate term, but looming on the horizon if Brexit fails. Anne McElvoy, editor for Economist Radio and senior editor at The Economist. Anne, thank you so much for joining us.
Great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Today's show was produced by Paige Osborne and edited by Orion Donovan Smith. To learn more about the team, plus links to our past shows and podcasts, it's all at the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for being with us. This is 1A.